Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Morgan and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 12. Please welcome our panel this evening, Melissa and Patrick. Alright, I will read the first paragraph on page 89 if anybody's following along, then the panel will each share. Step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Whichever one of y'all wants to go first.
I'll go first. My name's Melissa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Melissa.
Thanks for asking me to be here tonight. I have a sobriety date. It's September 8th, 2014. I have a home group, it's the West Kent group. We meet on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church on Princess Anne, not far from here. We're a big group, step study and open discussion. We have two different meetings, so come check us out sometime. I love step 12. My sponsor frequently asks me where I'm at in my program, and here the last several months I've been step 3 and 12-ing it. With a few of the other ones mixed in here and there, but these two paragraphs are super important to me. When I first came into the rooms, I spent a lot of time comparing myself out of the rooms. I wasn't as bad as you guys. I'm never going to get to this step because I don't have anything to offer anyone. Just a little bit about me. I've been with the same employer for 17 years. I've never been evicted, never been arrested, never had a DUI. Tried to kill myself a couple times, so, you know, that's not great. But, you know, overall, my consequences haven't really been that bad. So my idea of an alcoholic was not me. It was someone who was homeless, you know, drank on a brown paper bag. You know, the fact that I drank a fifth of vodka every day, that might qualify me. But I had myself together and I was functioning. So I really didn't understand how others were going to relate to me because I couldn't relate to anyone else, or so I thought. It was more me keeping myself from relating so that I didn't have to admit what I was and do something about my problem. When I finally decided to give AA a shot for real, I was fortunate enough to link up with a couple of women. One had 6 months of sobriety, which I could understand. The other one had over 30 years. That made no sense to me. And they took me under their wing and basically told me to just shut up and get in the car, and we went to meetings. And that's what kept me sober for a while. I stalled on working the steps for about 5 months. So that really, when it talks about to see a fellowship grow up about me, that fellowship started growing up about me immediately. And it was because I was willing to allow it to happen that time. The first time I kept myself on the outside edge and didn't want anything to do with anyone. This time I was ready. And now, you know, being sober and having worked the steps, I get to have this experience with other newcomers. And it's funny, I'm in a gratitude chain with several women, and we're going on almost 2 years now of a group text. And my gratitude list today included the fact that I have several newcomers in my life today. A couple of them are really young, a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old. You know, to have that awareness at that young age that they've got an issue, whether they prompted themselves into recovery or their families did, to be able to be that young and be willing to reach out. You know, they're in a program where they're in a facility during the week and they're out on the weekends, but they contact me every weekend. That's an honor to be able to be that person that they're comfortable with enough to talk to and reach out. I'm a total stranger, you know, and these are really young kids, and it's just amazing to me that, you know, because I do open my mouth, and I do realize today that I have something to share of value with someone else, that they're comfortable with that, and they want to, you know, talk to me, and they ask me to help them, and that's, I'm just really grateful for that. So I think that's all I have on this paragraph.
Thanks, Melissa. My name's Patrick Lanier. I'm an alcoholic.
Patrick.
My sobriety date's May 1st, 2009. All right. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. For me, why did I come here? I came here this last time on May 1st to stop drinking. That's why I came to AA. Yes, I had a lot of different issues in my life, but the issue that I was hoping AA was going to be able to help me with was to stop drinking. And so, you know, I got to do all 11 steps so I can get here, because it's telling me right here that this is going to ensure immunity from drinking, that, you know, I might recover, that I might not always be recovering, that I might be able to die with permanent sobriety. And that's, you know, that's really the goal for me in AA. So, you know, I got to give a couple of my experiences, because where it talks about carry this message to other alcoholics, and it has an explanation point next to it, like, carry this message. What fucking message is that? What message? And it's this message, this book. This is the book, you know, and this is the message they want me to carry. When I came to AA, I really wanted to stop drinking. I did. I had a lot of problems going on in my life. I wanted to stop drinking. I didn't know a lot about AA. I had a brief run-in with AA when I was 19 years old. And me being the smart-ass kid that I am, I figured that, you know, I was coming there to get papers signed by the court, and I figured that you guys put anonymous in your name, so that must mean you want to be anonymous. so I can probably just sign the papers myself. And I don't have to hang out with you guys because I really didn't want to hang out with you guys. I didn't want nothing you guys had. And then, you know, 10 years later, I come back and it's a different story. It's a completely different story. And all I know is, I mean, I've seen Hallmark videos. I've seen brief references in movies. And what it always seems is like people just go to meetings. They get their cup of coffee. They spill their guts. They sit in a circle. And that's AA. And so that's all I knew. And that's what I did. I went to a meeting and I sat there. And people, you know, were telling me things. Just don't drink no matter what. And I always, of course, thought that was very odd. Because if I could just not drink, I really wouldn't have to be sitting in the circle. But all right. And, you know, other things, you know, my next drink's an arm's length away. And, you know, I'm in the midst of a lot of turmoil at this time. I know I got to get sober. So I asked this really old lady if she could help me find a sponsor. Because I, too, thought that, like, getting a sponsor was like getting a prom date. And I was really apprehensive about it at the time. And so she said, oh, yeah, sweetie. Oh, yeah, I know the perfect guy for you. She brings me over to this guy, and this guy's like, yeah, sure, I'll help you. He gives me his phone number, and he tells me to call him every morning at 6:30 in the morning. And I'm like, okay. So I'm calling him every morning at 6:30, and nothing really is being said. What do you plan on doing today? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. All right, well, maybe I can pick you up and take you to a meeting tonight. Okay, and then he would pick me up and take me to a meeting, and he would... We'd be driving, and he'd always say the same spiel to me. He'd always tell me that it's really easy to get sober when your ass is on fire. But when the fire goes out, most people don't stick around. And then we go to a meeting. And I'm like, all right, this is AA, okay. And I don't know any better at the time. And that didn't last too long. I did that little song and dance for about 2 months till the day came where I just couldn't do this anymore. I was going to go drink. And... I called someone else that called me in the program, and he started talking to me about things. He secured my confidence in the things he said to me. He started being able to put words to the irritable, restless discontent, what the doctor's opinion in this book talks about. He started telling me about what it was like for him when he was sober. Whenever he was someplace, he needed to be someplace else. He talked to me about like never anything he strived for, and give it about a week or two, it wasn't good. You know, I had to get that girl, and then a week later, her girlfriend looks better. And like, I totally was like, this dude's making some sense. Like, he got through to me like no one else ever did. And one of the biggest things he said to me was that I had to drink. Now, listen, folks, I've been going to meetings now for 2 months, and I ain't never heard anyone tell me that. I heard a lot of people tell me, just don't drink no matter what. No matter what, if my ass is falling off, pick it up, carry it to a meeting. I heard that message a lot, but I never heard anyone tell me that you have to drink. And when he said that, that made so much sense to me. That made more sense than anything that I'd heard in the last 2 months. And, you know, and he really did. He really expressed to me how doomed I was. And with that, that secured my confidence in him, because I was like, hey, you think you'll sponsor me? And he's like, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I said, well, I'm calling you, man. He said, all right, that's a good start. And what happened is, and we're going to talk about it more, but we met up and we started reading this book. You know, and that was how it was for me. Norfolk AA, the mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous in Hampton Roads. It has not always been like this. To be honest with you, when I came in here 9 years ago, this my first sponsor, that guy that secured my confidence, this is where he brought me to go to AA. And like, there wasn't young people running around with big books everywhere. There was a few, but it wasn't like this. And I've watched this grow over these last 9 years. Watched this, just this magnificent thing happen in AA. And it's just wonderful to be a part of it, you know? And how did that happen? Sponsorship. Good sponsorship breeds good sobriety. That's all I got for right now. Thanks.
Thanks. All right, we're going to now head to page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his.
So when I usually start working with a new woman, we've met at a meeting. The previous paragraphs in the book talk about more so meeting through sanitariums or doctors and that sort of thing. And, you know, we're really fortunate now. You know, this book was written a really long time ago, that AA is, you know, we're based on attraction, not promotion, and our attraction is pretty well out there. You can't Google AA without getting a meeting list to pop up or something of that nature. A lot of it's through word of mouth, you know, friends referring friends, that sort of thing. So I've never actually been referred to a 12-step call via a doctor or a minister or anything like that. It's usually I meet these folks at meetings, and you know, when they ask if I'm willing to sponsor them or help them, however they want to term it, I always don't jump straight into the book reading with them. I sit and have coffee and just have a conversation, and kind of gauge where they're at, exactly like it talks about in this. And you know, there are a lot of things about myself that I considered very private and that I would never share with anyone, and I shared it with a sponsor for the first time doing my fourth and fifth step. And now those stories, which I was so horrified about, I willingly share with these newcomers because I know how it feels to feel so alone and like I'm the only one that did this crazy, stupid shit, and it's not the case. And I realize how comforting that is to have that. You know, I'll share that first, and then they're kind of like, okay, I'm willing to talk about, you know, something this time. And, you know, if they're clamming up or they're nervous and that sort of thing, I can talk. I'm nervous in front of all of you guys, but one-on-one, like, it's hard to get me to shut up sometimes. And that's also not a great thing, because then I'm not giving them the opportunity to talk if they want to. So, you know, in working with others and in doing this, it's teaching me a lot to be a good listener, not just to be someone that can share, because I need to learn when to shut up and when to just open my ears and listen to someone else. It's not always about me, shocking. There are times that I do need to open my mouth and take over a conversation, so to speak, but then there are lots of times that I just need to shut up and listen. Not give my advice, not moralize or lecture. I've done that too. You know, you need to do this, you need to do that. You know, that's not what a lot of people want. They just want you to sit and listen sometimes. I can give suggestions, and that's how I term it today. I try not to use the word advice. I try to use the word suggestions, because whenever people would give me their advice, I'd be like, oh, I'll tuck that away, but I'm still going to do what I want to do. But I, when I give a suggestion, I give it with an example of my own experience. And that tends to make people more comfortable, at least in my experience it does. You know, if his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. I do have some funny stories. My drinking days were not all dark and deep and scary. A lot of them I don't remember because I was a blackout drinker. But, you know, some of them were funny, and some there were some good times. But the important thing for me to also communicate in that is that they weren't good at the end. And I've had the experience of going out and doing more research, and they surely were not good then either. It got worse. So these are just things that I definitely make sure I share with newcomers when we first meet up. That's all I got.
All right. See your man alone if possible. And, you know, Melissa you got that one. Like, that's not always possible anymore. It's just not how things go. And when I read that, it makes me think, you know, more. When I'm sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's 1 hour, and if I share, maybe I'll go off for 5 minutes. During those 5 minutes, I need to carry a message of depth and weight. I really do, you know, it's for 1 hour. Because, like, when I look back to where I came from and to what have transpired over these last years, like, how hard is that for me to share 5 minutes about the greatness of this program to make it a little pep rally for that new person? You know, if I have a problem, I've gone to an AA meeting right after I got fired for some bullshit. And I went to that meeting, and not one person could tell in my share that I just got fired for some bullshit. And, you know, I shared still a message of depth and weight, and that this thing can work through and through, no matter what happens, you know. Bring hope to the hopeless. That's what was taught to me. And so I really don't know any other way, you know. I understand. I was sitting in a meeting last night, and one person, you know, they just wanted to bring their problem, and the whole meeting just circled around that person. And it was just like, problem, 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 sad, crying, crying, more crying. And I'm like, oh God, what about that guy? What about that guy that wanders into AA that's just had his house foreclosed on? His wife left him. You know, she took the kids. His job's over. He doesn't know what's gonna happen next, and he's got that shotgun in the corner of the house, and that's the only thing he can think about. And he knows that he has to stop drinking. And he wanders over to AA because he too has seen Hallmark movies on Alcoholics Anonymous. And he wanders into that meeting, and they're all in there crying. Life isn't much better. Life still sucks. Guess Miles will go home and put that shotgun to use. And those things happen. I'm not just like pulling this out of the sky. Those things happen on a daily basis, I think, in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, some of the most hopeless people wander into our rooms. And for me to think that, I have a problem today, so I should bring it to the group. You know, it told me right here, you know, as of working these 12 steps, that, you know, we got frequent contact with newcomers, and we got other people in our life that we can talk to. Or we could pony up some money and go to counseling. Imagine that. But for that 5 minutes, you know, I got to carry a message of depth and weight, and bring some hope to the hopeless. You know, it talks about giving a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit. You know, I don't know. I did drugs, too. I'll say it with pride up in this room, you know, because I said it in one meeting, and I got floored by someone in AA. But I haven't met very many thoroughbred alcoholics. There's just, they're few and far between. And so, you know, when I'm talking, I really have never met none, to be honest, but okay, we'll go with it. I imagine there's someone out there that's never done a little bit of this or a little bit of that. Yeah, we'll go with that, but okay. And you know, and when I got a guy, you know, I like, there's a certain niche for certain people. There's certain people that I work with that other people cannot touch in the rooms. And there's certain people that other people work with that I cannot touch in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But with the certain niche that I have, and I've watched it over the years, the people I sponsor, they all sort of mimic, me. They all sort of like me. They're usually criminals, convicts, whatever the case. Usually shot some dope once in a while, you know? It's just how it is. And so, you know, and that's how I like to talk to these people. I like to be real with them, you know? I like to, you know, match stories with them, because when we used to drink and get jacked up, bro, we'd be matching stories. So let's do it now. And, you know, and then I also want to throw in the same thing that I told you my sponsor told me the day when he came into my life. You know, I'm not here to get anybody sober. I don't get you sober. And that's the funny thing. Like, we're sitting here talking about sponsorship, but I ain't never read it. I've never read it in these first 163 pages. It never says sponsor once. And, you know, and I have to remember that. I just had practical experience on taking the steps. I haven't had a drink for a long time. I haven't had to do any mind-altering drugs. And this is what I did. And that's what I like to convey to anyone that I get the pleasure of reading this book with. Thanks.
The next reading is also on page 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads into the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him, from your experience, how the queer mental conditions surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book, unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
So I'm going to go against the book right now and say the part that says don't at this stage refer to this book, I don't really follow along with that first paragraph Morgan read. You know, it refers to chapter 3, more about alcoholism. That's where I learned what alcoholism was, what I was. I had to, on the educational variety, and I had to see it in black and white and have someone sit and read it with me and, you know, show me on paper, this is the description of alcoholism, this is the description of an alcoholic, and then they shared with me their experience. So in my experience, it's part and parcel. I need a human being talking to me about it one-on-one, and I also need to read it. That's not the case with everyone, but for me, that was definitely what worked, and that's typically what I use with most of the women that I work with. You know, every one of us is different. We're all human. We all absorb things differently, so I can't say that what I do with one person I do identically with another person. That would be unfair. It depends on the person. But, you know, as I'm talking about this, I talk about my feelings and how I felt sober, dry and drinking. And usually I was drinking to cover over the feelings that I felt when I was dry because I didn't know how to deal with them. I heard very early on someone share they knew what it felt like to be completely alone in a room full of people, and that described me to a T. And the way that I got comfortable with that feeling was to drink, because it made me into a different person. It made me comfortable in my own skin. I could stand up in front of a room full of people and open my mouth and say hi and, you know, laugh and carry on and have a good time. Because if I wasn't drinking, my mind was spinning a million miles an hour. It's like the duck on the pond analogy, where everything looks calm and still on the surface, and underneath, the feet are just going and going and going. And that was me all the time. My mind was constantly running. And the funny thing is, I work in retail. I'm around people all day long, every day. And I still had those feelings. There were times at work it was okay, I could put on a show. But frequently, if I was not, towards the end of my drinking, if I was not, did not have alcohol in my body at all times, I was in the bathroom having a panic attack or an anxiety attack. That was probably the last 6 months of my drinking. I was drinking around the clock because I had ceased to be able to function without alcohol in my body. I was that dependent, and that my mind just, I couldn't get on without it. And that's, for me, when it talks about the hopeless feature of the malady, every morning I would come to with the thought, I'm not going to drink today, and within 30 seconds I was like, well, that's not going to happen because I can't function without it. So I'll drink grapefruit juice and vodka on the way to work to knock the edge off. It's healthy because the grapefruit juice has vitamin C, so I'm getting my vitamins. And then I can function for the first few hours of work. And then I'll have some Red Bull to help burn off the brain fog. And then I'll go to lunch and I'll have a couple of glasses of wine. And then midway through the day, I'll go out and visit a job site and have a couple of drinks. somewhere, usually from the trunk of my car where I would stash a bottle. And then I'd go home, and on my way home, I would stop at this grocery store, this 7-Eleven, this ABC store. You know, I had a different path every day because I couldn't go to the same one every day. They'd know I'd have a problem. And rinse and repeat, and that was my life. That's insane. That is not normal. Normal people do not do those things. And that is a big part of explaining my experience and explaining how I came to the realization that I was an alcoholic. Sorry, I kind of got lost in here. But these are just all these things are what I share with a newcomer, and frequently they'll have a very similar story. That I've got a newcomer I'm working with now, and we started reading the book yesterday, actually. And, you know, we started talking about it, and we're identical, literally. I mean, not every single thing, but our drinking careers, our drinking experiences, we did the same 7-Eleven ABC store grocery store shuffle, you know, and for me, that makes me feel very comfortable. I'm not alone. I'm not the only one that did that. And, you know, that very last sentence, but insists that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. That's 100% true for me. I tried to do it by myself for a number of years. I tried to do it the very first time I came into AA via a treatment center, and I worked the steps off the wall by myself. I sponsored myself. It didn't work. I went out and did some more research. And then I came back, and then I still, you know, hemmed and hawed and dragged my feet, but I got a little bit willing to ask for some help, or at least got a little bit willing to get in the car when I was suggested that I get in the car and go to a meeting, and that made me realize I can't do this by myself, for sure. And today, you know, I'm surrounded by the fellowship, but number one is God. So God in my life today is what, I'm never alone. I couldn't, when my mom said something to me the other day about, she's like, you know, you need to get some alone time. I'm like, I'd have to crawl under a rock to be alone. Like, it's a first class problem to have today, to be surrounded by people that want to be around me and that want to be in my life. And the reason I have that is from this program and from the steps. That's what I've got.
Thanks. All right. Yes, both sides of the coin. All right. So my first sponsor, he told me he didn't have a lot of experience with some of the issues I had going on in my life. He'd never been incarcerated, never had kids, you know, never been looking at being incarcerated again, never had those problems. But he told me that, like, he knew this book, and, you know, and if he didn't know this book, I would have had absolutely no use for that man. And that's the one thing that, like, just because, like, he didn't have the experience that I had, but he had a deep, profound knowledge of this book and its workings. And that's why that situation worked out so well. You know, the other side of the coin, I always love to have those little talks, and they're really quick, you know? Every time I get locked up, it's the same thing. You know, I come to in a bullpen, and I'm like, oh, shit, how did this happen again? It's always the same thing. And then, you know, give me a couple days to dry out, and then it's all of a sudden time to scramble. Let's get on the phone. Let's try to get a lawyer. Let's do what we got to do to get the situation right. And then all of a sudden comes where I start professing about how I'm going to change my life. And this happens every time. Every time I'm always like, this is never going to happen again. And the thing I always like to, you know, when I talk about this with new people, it's like, you could strap me up to a lie detector test when these thoughts and when I'm saying these things, and I will pass it every time. I'm not lying to you when I say I don't want to live like this. I'm not lying to you when I say I don't want to be incarcerated for the rest of my life and I want to do a lot better. I'm telling you the God's honest truth, but I just have no way of making them things happen. And it was really out of bitter experience, time and time and time again, of the same thing happening to get me to this point where I could start to, you know, take these steps. And that, and, you know, I always explain, that's the only thing that's the difference. You know, I've tried, it talks in this book about ad infinitum, all these different things that we've tried. I mean, I ran away to Florida. I got a girl pregnant so she would get me out of the state. I was having a daughter. I figured all these things would fix it so many times. I'm going to move here. I'm not going to hang out with them. I'm going to get my duckies in a row. I'm going to do this. I'm going to get that girl. If I'm with that girl, I got this job, everything. If I start working out at the gym, 6 o'clock in One Life, let's do it. If, you know, if I get these things right, I'll be, everything's going to be good. And I hold on to that. I do, because I got to believe that, like, I can self-will this. All I got's myself. I got to get this right, you know? And then there's the big one that always followed me through till I started to get old, was that I'm just young. It's what young people do. Even though I don't see them on their fourth DUI, but whatever. We're not going to look at that because I'm a little bit crazy. But, you know, I would always tell myself that one day I'm going to grow out of this. I'm going to pick myself up by my bootstraps, and I'm going to freaking join the PTA, and I'm going to have a Volvo and a chow and a little white picket fence, and everything's going to be fantastic. And these are the crazy thoughts that go through my head. You know, one time there was, I was at work. Drunk. It was St. Patrick's Day. It went off terribly. My extremely good friend happened to be my boss. That was the only reason I didn't get fired. And some really terrible things happened. And when he finally was able to get a hold of me on the phone, when I sobered up, I told him, like, dude, that was inexcusable. Here's my plan. I told him I was going to start drinking Michelob Ultra. Me and him are going to the gym every day. I just need to drink Michelob Ultra, not drink the hard stuff. Everything's going to be fine. And I never drank any Michelob Ultra. But in my head, when I said those things, you could put me to the lie detector test and I'll pass it, because I really don't want to keep doing this. But I don't have any. I'm hopeless. And these are things that I like to convey to someone when they're new, that, like, we know how you feel. By the time you've gotten here, I mean, unless you're like me when I was 19, just getting a paper signed, and like I said, you can do it yourself. But if you're really hopeless and you really want to stop, I understand, man. I really do. I understand what it's like to, you know, Friday night, your girl, I remember my daughter's mother's like, all right, we're going to go out tonight. We're going to go to downtown Orlando. Everything's going to be cool with you, right? And I'm like, of course. Why wouldn't it be? And she's like, no, for real. And I'm like, yo, I'm getting drunk. I'm like, everything's great, babe. It'll be a great night. And then, shit, dude, 5 hours later, I don't know where the car is. I guess I drove it somewhere and left it there. And she's telling me I don't want to contact the police, but we need the car back. And I'm wearing a white shirt that's covered in Jameson and Guinness. It looks like I wiped my ass with it. And I'm just a hot mess. And there we are again, where I told her, everything's going to be all right, babe. And here we are 5 hours later, and they're like, go get him cocaine. Go get him cocaine, because I am just a hot mess. And this is what happens to me when I drink. And once again, maybe that's not everyone's story, but there's that there's that certain niche of people that I can help, dude, that totally understand. I know who you are sitting in this room. I see it in your eyes, dude. You get jacked up, dude. And you know what? Every time it's that threadbare idea. This time it's going to be different. And you know, that's where I love it. It's one of my favorite things, is matching mental inconsistencies with other people, dude, with other drunks. You know, it's freaking amazing. Thanks for letting me share. Okay.
Continuing on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism, because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of an alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual future freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are.
So yeah, this is great. It continues to talk about the hopelessness of my condition, which I talked a little bit about on the last paragraph. And again, you know, it's talking about someone that's maybe been referred to you by a doctor. That's not been my experience. So usually the people that I'm working with have already come to some conception or some realization about themselves, and that's why they're here. But you know, a fatal malady. This will kill me if I continue to drink the way that I do. Whether it's I drink myself to death, I get behind the wheel of a car, I kill myself successfully. You know, I've been unsuccessful a couple of times with that. But it will kill me because I can't live with it, and I can't live without it, without a solution. And the only solution I've found today is the solution that's outlined in this book that we're talking about. And you continue on to page 93. Generally, my experience with this book is if it's in italics, it's probably pretty important. So tell him exactly what happened to you. It continues to stress that my greatest asset is my experience, my past. You know, these things that I used to be so ashamed of, so guilty about, you know, I'm not proud of them by any means, but it's an asset because I can share that with someone else and they'll know that they're not alone and they're not the only one that did that. And then it continues down when it starts to talk about God. Shh, don't say that word. You know, when I was first getting sober and first started working with people, I would be very nervous about using the word God around a newcomer because I didn't want to scare him off because I knew how I felt when I first came in. You know, my background is raised Catholic, and when I would read God in here or spirituality, I equated that with religion. Oh, I have to be religious again. You know, no, that's not what this book says, and that is not what anyone in these rooms ever forced down my throat. I was probably a year and a half sober before I actually admitted that I had no conception of God. I'd been admitting I did for a long time. Step three is very important to me today because I didn't really work step three for about a year and a half. And that's not the case today. My first sponsor saw this in me and dropped me off at the Edgar Casey Center at the oceanfront and said, if you can't figure out what your conception of God is, go read every book in there and I'm sure you'll find something. I was like, what? You know, she's like, you like to read. You're the intelligent type. I'm sure you can figure something out there. And I was like, that's ridiculous. And she said, exactly. That's also, you know, the pressure you're putting on yourself to come up with a conception of God is pretty ridiculous. Just believe that you're not in charge. There is something else higher out there than you, and you are not it. It was that simple. I like to complicate the heck out of some simple things, and that was definitely one of them. So, you know, today, my higher power is very, very kind, loving, tolerant, patient, forgiving, because I screw up all the time. I'm a human being. I'm going to do that. You know, I don't have that God-fearing mindset anymore that I grew up with. That's religion. That's not spirituality. And that's not to say that today I haven't made the decision to go back to a church and expand my spiritual life, but that's my own personal decision outside of these rooms. That's not something that I will sit up here and share about for hours upon hours, because it has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous, other than the fact that I have a power greater than myself today who I do choose to call God, and it's my conception. And nobody else has to believe in that or agree with it. It's just what works for me and what's kept me sober. So that's all I got.
Thanks. All right, here comes the semantics. Continuing to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. I don't know, this is something I hold dear, and I have for a long time. You know, when I hear people start talking about diseases, it makes me cringe. What I have is 100% curable. What I have, I didn't gain through a roll of the dice, like someone with cancer. You know, and when I hear people, and I hear it all the time, meetings, the disease of alcohol, there's a South Park episode that is fire when they talk about that. You should watch it. You should look it up on YouTube. But it really rang, it rang true to me. Like, I got the, you know, it's an excuse for my bad behavior. I got the disease of alcoholism. Yo, I have a fatal malady. I have an illness. But it's 100% curable. And it asked the bare minimum to be cured. Really, when I look back, like, what they asked me, I don't have to go get a blood transfusion every week, dude. I don't have to take handfuls and handfuls of pills. I don't have to lose all my hair. No, just show up to a meeting, read this book, carry this message, read with somebody else, pray to a God I don't understand, and I'm good. I've recovered from this disease of alcoholism. So, I mean, I always got to bring that point in. Whatever, you know, I don't know. If you know me, you know that I definitely have always had a problem with that. When it talks about spiritual things, this is the next thing, you know. I heard a lot. This is where it got really weird for me in AA. Because I go to a meeting, I don't know anything really about this program, and I start to hear people talking about something bigger than themselves. And it's just really baffling. I hear one person say higher power. I hear another person say, oh, the, you know, God that I choose to call God. I'm like, you choose to go, okay, whatever. And then I hear another guy in the back of the room says Jesus Christ, and everyone like darting glances at him like he's saying something wrong. And I'm like, what is going on here? This is completely insane, dude. And that's it. Like, once again, we're back in We Agnostics. We know how he feels when it talks about the prejudice and stuff. And the greatest thing, like, I hear it all the time. Oh, if you don't believe in a higher power, you can believe in a group of drunks. No, how about this? You don't have to believe anything. You don't have to believe in anything. And that's what, I don't know. I understand English a little bit. That's what the book says to me. When I get to We Agnostics, it says the main purpose of this book is to show me how to get a power that will solve all my problems. I'm going to get that by reading this book. I don't have to believe in my sponsor's God. I don't have to believe in your God. I don't have to believe in Jesus. I don't have to believe in Buddha. I don't have to believe in anything. I just need to show a little bit of willingness and turn these pages. And it's going to come to me. And that's the thing, because I come in here with all these questions, and yeah, like, I'll be the first to admit, like, my boots were smoked when I got here. I really wasn't debating deities when I walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have time for that. Maybe if they weren't smoked, I might have had a little bit more time to figure out, well, you know, I don't know. I was screwed, so whatever, okay. I tried reading the Bible once. It really didn't do much for me, but we'll give this a shot. And, you know, I always, that's always a red flag for me, too, because I always will tell someone I'm working with, like, you don't have to believe anything. And if they keep harping on that God issue, I'm like, oh, is that really what's holding you up here, dude? Like, how doomed are you? Because they're saying God in the meeting, you're getting all freaked out. Like, really? I mean, when you're doomed, dude, when there's nowhere else to turn, what the hell? It's not, but, all right, and, you know, so that's the thing. And, like, it was great that people had answers for things when I came here. You know, it's still to this day, I always stand by the thing, God is good, good is God. And that's about as much as I know about that, really. And what happened was I had a lot of questions. I did, you know, and they had answers for them. I asked, like, oh, so this God's going to save me from alcoholism. Why didn't you save the Jews from the Holocaust? Why didn't you save them kids in part ties getting their arms chopped off for blood diamonds? And I'm asking because I just love to talk anyways, and I'm just throwing these questions out there. And luckily, I had people that were smart around me. And they pointed out to me that, like, do you ever think God had nothing to do with any of that? Did you ever think that selfishness was that? Did you ever think that selfishness is the same thing that drove your ass in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? Maybe those two things are what happened. And maybe God's only everything that's good. And when they started talking about that, and then when we're reading We Agnostics and we're talking about the freaking the metal girders and the atoms and all that put together, I'm like, all right, cool. That's enough. I can roll with this. I can roll with that. There's something bigger than me. And that's all they're asking. They're not asking me to draw a picture of Jesus. They're just asking me to believe that there's a little something bigger. And that was it. And with that, yeah, all right, I can dig that. There's something out there that's bigger than me. And with that, I could move, you know? I always like to try to put myself in someone new's place, dude. Like, make it easy on them. I'm just supposed to be your friend, and I'm helping you to have a life beyond your wildest dreams. You know, that's, I'm helping you. I'm helping God do God's work, all right? But, like, you know, so why don't I just put myself in their place? You don't want to believe in God? That's cool. You don't have to. Can you meet with me and read some of this book? All right, we can start there. I can meet you where you're at. Thanks.
We only got two left. I'm going to just read the last two readings and each of you all do a couple minutes on each, if that's cool. Outline the program of action. It's on page 94. Explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you're now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempts to pass this on to him play a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. And then on page 96, it's, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon be convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half a dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. A couple minutes from each of y'all.
This is good stuff. I've had the experience of being interviewed to be a sponsor, and was asked what my success rate was with my sponsees. And I said, I'm 100% successful because I'm still sober today. It is not my responsibility to get or keep anyone sober. It's my responsibility to show you the solution, which is outlined in this book. And so my responsibility is, like Patrick said, to meet you where you're at, to read this book, to take you through the steps, walk with you side by side. I'm not in charge of you. I'm not your banker, your babysitter, your boss, your whatever you want to term on it. And I have had that experience. I've had a sponsee give me her debit card when her husband went underway because she couldn't trust herself to not spend money uncontrollably. You know, there's a number of things that I've been asked to do, and that's not my responsibility. My responsibility is, like I said, to show an alcoholic where to find the solution and to work the program with them. I have spent some time, too long of time, with an alcoholic who I'm thoroughly convinced I can fix. I'm a fixer. I haven't done this since that time, but it's very true. You know, I'm denying someone else the chance to get the help that they really want. You know, when it boils down to it, if you want the help, if you're desperate enough for it, you'll seek it out. It's not my job to shove it down your throat. You can, what's the phrase? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. That's, you know, it's up to each and every individual to determine where they're at, how bad they want it. Just as it was up to me to determine that for myself as well. And today I'm incredibly grateful that I made that determination and showed up here, because, you know, like Patrick said, I do have a life beyond my wildest dreams today. Certainly not where I expected to be when I first crawled in here about 3.5 years ago. So thanks.
Thanks, Melissa. I won't hold you guys hostage for too long. Let's see here. All right, so. Yeah, dude, I don't know. I've definitely been blessed to be able to work with people. And yeah, my success rate is definitely piss poor. I could blame it on myself. You know, In the beginning, I tried different things. I thought I could do this better than the big book. I remember this one kid wrote out his fourth step, and I came up with this great idea because he was a little convict like myself. So I decided we'd go out to St. Bride's Prison, and we would read it. Just for the theatrics. And so we head out there at Friday. It was like Friday night at 8 o'clock, and we're in the parking lot of St. Bride's, and this truck pulls up with the lights on, and they're like, what the hell are you guys doing here? And so then I proceed to tell them about this spiritual program of action and how we're taking the fourth step. And they're like, huh? He's like, AA's held here Monday at 5 o'clock. And I'm like, well, we're not really here to bring AA inside. He's like, dude, you're going to have to go talk to the lieutenant. And he makes me go to the front. And then I proceed to tell the lieutenant what we're doing there. And he has no clue either. And he says, you need to talk to the lady that's in charge of treatment here at the prison. You need to call her on Monday. And finally, I just gave up. And I got in the car and left. And as I'm leaving, the kid goes, dude, I got warrants for my arrest. And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, oops. Because, you know, I never read that in the big book. But, of course, me, I like to mix things up, you know, keep things lively. And you know, and I learned these things that, you know, if I'm going to work with someone, what should be one of my first things that I do? It's called reading, working with others, and try to follow this to the best of my ability. You know, they precisely showed me how to recover from alcoholism. It's a privilege to be able to show another person precisely how I've recovered and to get to read with them and have lively conversations and to talk about what that paragraph meant to them. Then I tell them what it meant to me. And, you know, all the time it happens when I'm reading with someone, they're like, dude, I read that book. I never thought of it like that. And, you know, it goes back to when I was new and my sponsor was reading with me. I never thought of it like that either. You know, and every time I get to read this, dude, I get to freshen up my skills a little bit more, and I get to really get a deeper understanding of what we're trying to say. And so, you know, it talks about it in here that, you know, you let him, give him the book, tell him to go read it. And I mean, it's a direction. They did say precise, but for me, like, once again, I put myself in that person's shoes. You know, I remember when me and my sponsor would read, he would tell me, like, go home and read these pages. And then the next day, I'd talk to him on the phone. He's like, yo, did you read that last night? And I'm like, no. And he's like, well, at least you're honest. And because, I mean, and like sometimes I'd open the book and I'd start looking. And then one of my friends, that's now my sponsor, used to tell me, because I'd tell him, I'm like, I can't freaking pay attention. He's like, follow along with your finger. And I'm like, so I'm trying to do that. But I got a laptop over there. I got a cell phone over there. Like, I just can't, even though my ass is completely on fire, I just can't get it, you know? And then when I do read it, it definitely doesn't make the sense as getting someone's perspective that have had this experience. And so, you know, I definitely take great joy. And I think it's a responsibility for me to read this book with newcomers. You know, so we can definitely get a full understanding, because it's definitely pretty freaking important what they're trying to say here. And, you know, and the next thing that I'm going to say is that, like, with being a spiritual guide, You know, it was said by Melissa in the beginning, I'm very liberal when it comes to helping someone. I don't know what you should do about your girlfriend. I don't know where you should work. I don't know about any of these things, really. You don't want my advice. I'm going to tell you that from the get-go. Like, I know how to burn relationships to the ground. I know how to get fired. I know how to freaking ruin money and just, like, spend it and blow it. You know, so that's why I'm always like, I don't know, man. I mean, I always make sure that I always say, like, this is my opinion, but you're going to do what you're going to do, and that's cool. We can make messes. As long as we're doing this, we can make all the messes we want, and we can clean them up later. And that's something my old sponsor used to tell me all the time. So with that, you know, it's been great talking to you guys. And, you know, I hope you guys read this book, and everyone gets the privilege to get to read it with other people. I always tell my guys that, you know, that's the only thing. I'll pick you up. You can smoke my cigarettes. I'll buy you coffee. We'll read. We can go to the gym. We can do whatever, you know. All I ask is that you do it for someone else. Thanks.
All right. Thank you guys very much. All right. Pass the seven tradition baskets. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup / central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements? I know we have one as a group. I'll say it now, I guess. April 30th, Monday, here, we are having supper and a speaker. We are having, is it Phyllis D. from Gloucester? Food at 6. Please bring a dish if you can. If not, bring yourself. There's some flyers over there. Feel free to take them. There's a really large stack still, so take them back to your groups if you remember. Yeah, Monday, April 30th, 6 p.m., food, speaker at 7. Any other AA-related announcements?
My name is Ashton. I'm an alcoholic. The Eastern Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous will be held at the Washington Hilton Memorial Day weekend in Washington, D.C. There's a bunch of people in this area. People have rooms already, so if you're interested and you want to go check out a conference, just get plugged in and just see what it's all about. Please see me after. I do have a flyer. And then October 26th to the 28th here in Virginia Beach, at the Holiday Inn, Biscuit Paws, Virginia State Conference, Young People Town Hall Conference is going down. And right now the registration is $15, and there's a way to get some raffle tickets to actually try to win a free weekend of that conference. So if you're interested in any of that stuff, please see me out. Thanks.
Thanks. Anybody else? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise their hands? Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? Please say your first name. We'd like to welcome you.
Hi, my name's Scott. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Scott.
Welcome, ma'am.
Hi, my name's Jessica.
I'm alcoholic.
Hey,
Jessica.
Hey,
Jessica. Welcome.
Welcome.
Josh,
hey, Josh. Hey, Josh. Welcome.
Hey, Ken.
Hey, Ken. Welcome.
I'm Rob.
Hey, Rob, welcome.
Everybody? Any more? No? Okay. We got literature over there. The books have a price inside. See a home group member if you'd like to purchase. If you can fold it, it is free. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. And all Audio recordings of the meetings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, let's thank the panel again. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, 22nd and Colonial. Straight shot down Colonial. Can I get a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Last two paragraphs.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then.
All right, let's go to your turn.
Forever and ever. Amen.
Stay. Just stay.